Let's continue our look at the transition of the Hasmonean kingdom into a Roman tributary, which happened in 63 BC. And you remember the basics of this was there was a Jewish civil war going on between two brothers fighting over the throne. And the Romans were asked to come and make a determination as to which of them was legitimate. Pompey the Great was the one who came to make this decision. And because of the aggressiveness of the younger brother, Aristobulus, Pompey eventually decides in favor of Hyrcanus, the older brother, and affirms that he is the high priest and ethnarch of the Jewish people, and therefore the legal ally of the Roman Republic, while Aristobulus is now the usurper and therefore the enemy of the Roman Republic. And so Aristobulus is arrested. In the process, Jerusalem is besieged, not Jerusalem city, because Pompey was actually welcomed into the city proper. But the temple complex, the walls of the temple, were besieged by Pompey and broken through, and the supporters of Aristobulus were put down, mostly at the hands of the pro-Hyrcanus Jewish people. And then Pompey takes Aristobulus and goes away to Rome to become part of what we now call the first triumvirate, or power-sharing arrangement between himself and Julius Caesar and a man by the name of Crassus. And things apparently settled down for a little while. But then, as I talked about yesterday, in 58 BC, the young son of Aristobulus, a man by the name of Alexander, who had escaped when his family was taken away to Rome, he had built up an army. And he came to Jerusalem, deposed Hyrcanus from his high priesthood and his ethnarchy, and then he began rebuilding the walls of the Jerusalem temple complex that had been torn down by Pompey. The following year, after Pompey found out about this, he dispatched one of his people, Gabinius, to deal with this issue. And it was resolved after a bit with Aristobulus agreeing to give up control of Jerusalem. Hyrcanus ends up becoming, again, the high priest and ethnarch of the Jewish people. And Gabinius makes the Jewish territory, he divides it up into five regions, each of them governed by a council, much like the Sanhedrin at Jerusalem. Councils at these five different places. And so it is now an aristocratic government among the Jews. These councils have members of Jewish aristocracy that are leading in these councils. And so now the Jewish people are governed by these councils with the Romans of Syria kind of overwatching them. And at this time, the Jews were still paying war reparations for what had happened in 63. And now we come to, I believe, the year 56, possibly into 55, but somewhere right around that time, Aristobulus and his other son Antigonus escape from Rome. Now, they were not in prison. They were kind of under house arrest. And so they run away from Rome. They come to Judea because they want to continue Alexander's fight against Gabinius and retake Jerusalem and reestablish Aristobulus's right to the throne. So the civil war is on again. In 55 BC, while Gabinius was dealing with some Roman business in Egypt, Alexander resumed his attempts to reestablish the Hasmonean kingdom. And when Gabinius returned from Egypt, he discovered that Alexander had trapped what remained of the Roman forces in Judea up on Mount Gerizim. And so Gabinius defeats Alexander's forces, along with the help of Antipater the Idumean, which that's Herod the Great's dad. And he once again declared that Hyrcanus was the legitimate high priest and ethnarch of the Jews. So you see that the Romans repeatedly keep coming in as allies of Hyrcanus as high priest and ethnarch, and fighting against Aristobulus's line. Now, eventually, Alexander, the son, is captured, and he's sent off to Rome to be imprisoned with his father, because apparently his dad got captured again. Well, the first triumvirate in Rome broke apart in the later 50s. Julius Caesar's daughter, who was married to Pompey, died. And that very tenuous connection between the two men ended. And their animosity toward one another grew. And it was just made worse by the fact that their third person in the triumvirate, Crassus, dies in battle with the Parthians around this same time as well. And so you end up with two guys, both of whom want to be the strong man in the Roman Republic. And that would be Julius Caesar and Pompey the Great. In the year 49, this political tension reached its climax when Julius Caesar defied Pompey's instructions. Pompey was acting as the head of the city of Rome at that time. He told him he had to relinquish control of his armies before he comes to the city itself to participate in political matters. This was a long-standing tradition that if you were functioning as a Roman general elsewhere in the world, and then you came back to Rome to involve yourself in political matters, you always came without your army. And so Pompey told Julius Caesar, leave your army out there. And Julius Caesar decided, no, he was not going to leave his army behind. And so this is the famous cross the Rubicon moment, because the Rubicon was the name of the boundary river that the soldiers were supposed to stay on the other side of. So Julius Caesar crosses the Rubicon with his army, effectively invading the Roman Republic and starting the civil war between himself and Pompey's side. As part of his strategy, Julius Caesar freed Aristobulus the Jew, granted him and his son Alexander two Roman legions, and instructed them to go and subdue Syria and their own Judea on behalf of Julius Caesar. So you can see here what I've been telling you. The relationship between the Jews and the Romans is so intertwined as to be unravelable. We can't pick it apart easily. Because remember, the treaty said that any enemy of the Romans was supposed to be treated as an enemy of the Jews and vice versa. So Julius Caesar tells Aristobulus, Pompey is the enemy of the legitimate Roman government. And therefore, he's your enemy as well. And so, we're back to war again. Now, Aristobulus never made it anywhere near Syria or Judea, because agents of Pompey poisoned him to death. They also captured and beheaded Alexander. And so the war is now full-blown, and it's spilling all over the eastern end of the Mediterranean basin. In September of 48 BC, Pompey was assassinated in Egypt. So the head of the snake for one side of the civil war is cut off. Julius Caesar then went to Egypt, where he supported Cleopatra the VII, and this is the very famous Cleopatra, in her own civil war against her brother slash husband, Ptolemy the 13th. The Egyptian Macedonian kingship and queenship were very twisted. Brothers and sisters intermarried and tried to keep the line in the family. It was very strange. But anyway, Julius Caesar is in Egypt, and he is supporting Cleopatra to be the queen of the Ptolemaic Empire there. In the year 47, while Julius Caesar is carrying on battles in Egypt, Antipater the Idumean, the father of Herod the Great, at the insistence of Hyrcanus, the Jewish high priest and ethnarch of the Jews, he sent Jewish troops to Egypt to assist Julius Caesar in his fights. Because that's the treaty arrangement. Anyone that's an enemy of the legitimate Roman leadership is an enemy of the Jewish legitimate leadership. So Hyrcanus sees Julius Caesar as being the true representative of the Roman Republic and the Roman Senate. So he supports him. Now, despite accusations by Antigonus, the son of the lately poisoned Aristobulus and the brother of the beheaded Alexander, that Antipater and Hyrcanus were involved in those deaths and were illegitimately ruling Judea, Julius Caesar rewarded his newest allies. Now, you got to keep in mind here, Antigonus is the next guy claiming he has the right to the Jewish throne. He's already in the camp of Julius Caesar, and now the guy he's opposed to, Hyrcanus, has joined the camp of Julius Caesar. And so he wants to do anything in his power to have Julius Caesar refuse the legitimacy of Hyrcanus and of Antipater the Idumean. But Julius Caesar is having nothing to do with that. He sees these guys as being important allies. And so Hyrcanus was designated by Julius Caesar as high priest and ethnarch of the Jews. So that was a declaration of Julius Caesar. He was also permitted to finish that rebuilding of the temple complex walls that were broken down by Pompey. And then Antipater's family, as a reward for him fighting so valiantly on behalf of Julius Caesar and the Roman Republic, Antipater's family were all declared Roman citizens. That includes the young Herod the Great. They were also given this special status of being tax exempt. So most Roman citizens paid taxes to Rome. Antipater's family, the moment they became Roman citizens, they were also told, hey, by the way, you'll never have to pay Roman taxes, ever, the rest of your lives. And so this is one of the reasons that Herod the Great was able to build up a huge financial fortune, because he never paid a penny of taxes his entire life. Now, he also designated Antipater as the chief steward of Judea, that is, Hyrcanus's top official. Now, Antipater, in this new role, immediately informed the Jews, that is, all the Jewish people, that cooperation with Hyrcanus, the high priest and ethnarch, and himself as the chief steward of Judea, and with Caesar, that this would bring peace and prosperity, such as was the case with the rebuilding of the walls around the temple. So he's basically promoting this idea, hey, us being in charge, Hyrcanus, myself, and Caesar being in charge, this brings good things for the Jewish people. Cooperate. But he also put out a warning. He said that further disturbances, like those that were being incited by members of the late Aristobulus' family, would bring serious repercussions, because they would be counted as not just enemies of the Jewish people, but enemies of the Roman Republic as well. And then, in 47 BC, he appointed his two sons to become members of leadership within this new alignment of the, we can't quite call it a kingdom, but it's an ethnarchy of Hyrcanus over the Jewish people. Phasaelus, who was his oldest son, and I don't know exactly how old he was, he must have been at least in his later 20s, possibly in his early 30s. Phasaelus is made the overseer of Jerusalem city and of the surrounding region immediately around the city. And Josephus reports that Phasaelus administered his responsibilities with excellence. He has nothing but good things to say in his history about Phasaelus. Herod, which is the guy we know as Herod the Great, was 25 years old at this time. And he was made the overseer of Galilee. He immediately became a popular hero to the people in northern Galilee and southern Syria, because when he went there, he began wiping out Jewish gangs that had been terrorizing the region. Thugs that were going around and stealing things from the Jewish people and from the Syrian people north of Galilee. And so he goes and starts having heavy reprisals against these guys. And so Josephus says that songs were composed in his honor. And the governor of Syria at this time, a man by the name of Sextus Caesar, who was Julius Caesar's cousin, commended Herod as being the hero of the Jewish people in Galilee and of the Syrian people as well. Josephus gives a later assessment of this early period of leadership within the Judean kingdom by Herod's Idumean family as the following. Are you ready? This is from Antiquities, Book 14, chapter number 9. This conduct procured from the nation to Antipater such respect as is due to kings, and such honors as he might partake of if he were an absolute lord of the country. Yet did not this splendor of his, as frequently happens, in the least diminish in him that kindness and fidelity which he owed to Hyrcanus. So according to Josephus, Herod the Great's dad, Antipater the Idumean, was a gracious and faithful man, that he administered justice well, and that he owed and paid great honor to his boss, Hyrcanus, the high priest and ethnarch of the Jews. And so that is some really high praise, I think, given by Josephus to Herod's dad. I want to finish today, more than likely, with a couple of Roman decrees from this period. Because again, I'm trying to dissuade you from buying into this false information that the Romans were invaders of the Jewish lands, and that they were hated by the Jewish people, and that they were abusers of the Jewish faith, and things of that nature. Because that was certainly not the case at this time in history. And so here are two decrees recorded in Antiquities, Book 14, Chapter 10, by Josephus. And they are decrees issued by Julius Caesar. Caius Caesar, Imperator the second time, which that would be 47 BC, the very year that we were just talking about, has ordained that all the country of the Jews, excepting Joppa, pay a tribute yearly for the city Jerusalem, excepting the seventh year, which they call the sabbatical year, because thereon they neither receive the fruits of their trees, nor do they sow the land, and that they pay their tribute in Sidon on the second year of the sabbatic period, the fourth part, or 25%, of what was sown, and besides this, they are to pay the same tithes to Hyrcanus and his sons, which they paid to their forefathers. Now let me break in. This basically means that the Roman leader, Julius Caesar, and the Republic Senate that he represents acknowledge that the Jewish people only work 6 of 7 years, and therefore they were only required to pay their tributary taxes for 6 of those 7 years. They were immune from taxes in the sabbatic year. The tax rate for the country was 25%. But also, he upholds this idea, the Jewish people have to pay their 10% tithe to Hyrcanus every single year, as is required by Jewish law. Continuing. And that no one, neither president nor lieutenant nor ambassador, raise auxiliaries within the bounds of Judea, nor made soldiers exact money of them for winter quarters or under any pretense, but that they may be free of all sorts of injuries, and that whatsoever they shall have hereafter are in possession of or have bought, they shall retain them all. So Jewish possessions were inviolate to Roman activities. Roman legions could not forcibly raise troops among the Jews. And they could not force the Jews to provide winter quarters. That was written into this law. And then, let me skip down a little bit here. It's the pleasure of the Senate that as to the villages which are in the great plain, which Hyrcanus and his forefathers formerly possessed, Hyrcanus and the Jews have them, with the same privileges which with they formerly had them, and that the same original ordinances shall remain in force which concern the Jews with regard to their high priests. So certain cities are returned underneath Hyrcanus's control. And then it is the pleasure also of the Senate that Hyrcanus the ethnarch and the Jews retain those places, countries, and villages which belong to the kings of Syria and Phoenicia, the confederates of the Romans, and which they've bestowed on them as their free gifts. So they get to get and keep certain territories from the past. And then this is kind of interesting at the end. It's also granted to Hyrcanus and to his sons and to the ambassadors by them sent to us. So people coming to Rome, including Hyrcanus, if ever does, that in the fights between single gladiators and in those with beasts, they shall sit among the senators to see these shows. So basically, if you guys come to Rome as representatives of the Jewish people, you're going to be treated as if you are senators. That's your status in our society. Even when you go to the Coliseum or Circus or wherever to see these shows, you get the best seating. And that when they desire an audience, that is with the precept, that's Julius Caesar, or with the members of the Senate, they shall be introduced into the Senate by the dictator, that's Julius Caesar, or by the general of the horse, that's number two guy in the military. And when they've introduced them, their answer shall be returned to them 10 days at the farthest after the decree of the Senate is made about their affairs. So anything that the Jews ask of the Senate has to get a response within 10 days. High priority and otherwise. So that's one of Julius Caesar's decrees from 47 BC, showing that the Jewish people were held in high regard. The other one is written to the Roman leader on a couple of islands in the Aegean Sea, where apparently he'd found out that Jews were not being given their special privileges. And so this is what he says. "Now, it does not please me that such decrees should be made against our friends and common and confederates, whereby they're forbidden to live according to their own customs, or to bring in contributions for common suppers and holy festivals, which they are not forbidden to do even at Rome itself." So he says, "I am not happy to find out that you are not letting the Jewish people be Jewish. So you need to knock it off. And even when you have decrees that you think might be interpreted against them, they're not. Don't do it." And so basically it was the idea of Jews gathering in special festivals. There were other problems that the Romans were having with Bacchanal rioters for the Bacchanal feasts. And they'd put orders out against that. And so Julius Caesar says, "Hey, that doesn't apply to Jewish people. You let them get together on their regular meetings and for their festivals without any more problems."